Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Every other Monday, we're coming at you with news, show reviews, and previews of upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're just getting into the scene or you've seen it all, this is the show for you.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network and wherever you get your audio.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
Lowe's knows that more projects mean more tools. For a limited time, new and existing MyLowe's Rewards credit card members can get 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more, in-store and online. Don't wait to get the things you need. Get special financing today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Now through August 27th, choose 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more. Offer subject to credit approval and cannot be combined. Minimum monthly payments required. See store or Lowe's.com for details.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So
Faster, freak
out!
Open the Voice Gate for August 7th, 2025. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed or on our dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed, where all podcasts are sold. You could also follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. Click the red boxes to sponsor this podcast, and you can set up a one-time or reoccurring donation, no obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank our previous sponsors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears, alongside your other host, Case Lowe. In case we were talking about our week in our little pre-pro meeting before hitting record, I teased you a little bit this week. I'm not even going to like string this out here. I moved this week, and the weirdest thing about this house is the master bathroom case has a urinal in it.
Oh, that's badass. That's cool.
Like a full on, there's the commode and there's a urinal.
That is fun. That is a conversation starter when people come over. That's a good icebreaker. Oh, yeah. That's a good fact. That even if it's not the most functional of items to have in a house, that's a good thing to have in your back pocket for when a conversation with anybody starts getting a little slow.
And it's going to be something where, buddy, anyone who comes over to the house and they're like, well, someone's using that one. Can we just go in the master? And then it's just like not going to tell them that there's going to be a urinal surprise for them. Also, what kind of decision that has to be made? Well, I never met the couple who we bought this house from. What kind of decision has to be made to be like, we must put in like an actual like urinal that you would see in an office bathroom urinal? In someone's house.
Yeah, because it seems like urinals are a little out of fashion right now. The setup that people are gravitating to is obviously the home bidet setup, but the urinal is a bold move. It's a bold choice. It's a bold move. It's one that raises a lot of questions. I would certainly like to know more about the people that installed it now. I think that's very, very fun. So, no, that is... even if you don't plan on using it, that is just a fun thing to have around. That's almost the conversational equivalent of like a pool table in the basement, where when things get slow, you go, well, you know, I've got this pool table, but urinal upstairs. All right, I'm game. That, you've got my attention with that.
Right. And given how my luck famously was with my other house, with a house built in the middle of a drained river ditch, and having a garage that conservatively looked like that there was some sort of death happening into it, it kind of gave me like a nice hiding going into this house, I feel like.
That's a good omen. It's a good omen. I like that.
But how have you been, Bud? I know you had your interview of Tony Khan over the last week, Q101, getting a bunch of plugs
fucking,
for it.
The fucking Cody interview dropped right after I did the Tony Khan interview. It would have been a far more interesting interview had Bill Simmons and Cody Rhodes had that conversation a week earlier. But yes, that I have no more Tony Khan interview to plugs this week. We did two over the course of 3 weeks and three over the course of the last 6 months. And I think this week marks 1 year since our first Zoom call, which has the infamous moment where I said that I write for voicesofwrestling.com and Tony's eyes looked like they were going to pop out of his head. But I don't have any Tony Khan updates. What I do have is, I believe it was last week, and I can't say for sure because time just blends together now, and I feel like it's been 6 months since the last time I talked to you. I believe it was last week we were talking about the OC on this show.
Yes, we did.
That's right, because I saw Death Cab earlier this week. That's why we're recording later than normal. I saw Death Cab on Tuesday night. They were fantastic. Don't need to get into the Death Cab review. What I have a recommendation for a new melodramatic teen series that, if it came out 20 years ago, would be on the CW. Now it's on a streaming platform. I was talking to somebody in my life and they were describing this show to me, and every detail they gave me seemed more and more insane. So I had to check the show out for myself today. And so before I started doing my notes for this episode, I threw on the first few episodes of this show. Mike, what do you know about The Summer That I Turned Pretty?
I think what I need to let you know is that you're talking to the wrong member of this relationship about this show.
I figured there was a chance that just by being married to the person you're married to, that you had some knowledge of it. But boy, this show's insane. It's really, if you are one of those people that were into a One Tree Hill, OC, Gilmore Girls, Gossip Girl type show, this is... I would not say on that level of quality. The acting in the show, at least in season one, a little stiff. You know, not exactly the greatest performances that I've ever seen, but the storylines of this show are completely insane.
I feel like that has been something that has happened with these kinds of shows. I don't know if it was you I was talking about Jenny in Georgia with, or if we talked about this on show.
Yes,
or
I believe you mentioned that. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems that like we have now gotten to a point with like these kinds of shows, because like, remember how just like understated a show like Dawson's Creek was in the 90s, right? Like, it just seems like it was very much the relatable issues, like the so-called life, Party of Five, like all of those were all based with a inherent realism. I don't know if this is a COVID thing, if this is a internet brain rot thing, but it seems that like these kinds of pulpy shows have now gone like so much further. And I guess it kind of started with things like Desperate Housewives, right? Like that kind of pulp really like being like that kind of drama in the early aughts, kind of, I guess, would be more of the through line than the OC, who was insane in its own way, especially as it gets to like season three.
Yeah, that feels like a safe jumping off point there, the Desperate Housewives comp, because that's a show that I've never seen, but it's one that I've always been intrigued by because it seemed like it was so dramatic and unrelenting and pretty crazy. So I'm not going to give you a hard sell recommendation on The Summer That I Turned Pretty on Amazon Prime. I think we both have better things to be doing with our lives. That, of course, means that I will continue to watch it and I will catch up with the new season when I get there. I'm only a few episodes into season one. But, you know, if you need a palate cleanser from the CMLL and from the AEW and from this very
good G1 climax.
Oh, my God. Can we talk about the G1
for a second? I'm through day four. Yeah. Can we do this for a second? Because I haven't had anyone to really talk to. Case, I just have had, I'm so far behind on the G1 climax. And the only thing that, like, my big takeaway is Great O'Conn is really great and they should do more with him.
That's what I hear people say. And then I watch him and I'm never all the way there. The only G1 match that I've watched this year was Shingo versus Takeshita, which is worth going out of your way to watch. It's Shingo and Takeshita, and it's awesome. It's fantastic. It's Shingo and Takeshita. But I don't know, man. I look at these results every day, and I don't want to watch any of those people. That is not, this does not seem like a fun tournament.
And like a part of it is just like, you have to be willing to have at least one tournament match a night be a shenanigans fest. And it's not a very well executed shenanigan fest at that. You know, I really like Takeshita's the other person, at least for where I'm at, who has had that tournament, but you kind of expect that out of them. But you just have like reminders, like at least for where I'm at, I haven't gotten to the Shingo Takeshita match yet, but I'm like building furniture, flat pack furniture, that has been my thing. And I have a running thing over in Blue Sky where I just give like 1 minute or like one thing of thoughts more for me to track where I'm at. But Takeshita's at like that point where like when it is like you're watching someone in their prime and you see a match that he has and you get reminded like, oh yeah, Konosuke Takeshita is in his prime. And it's just like a cool moment to like remind yourself of when you see someone at like their peak in the moment and being able to just kind of step away and go like, wow, that is someone who is kind of special. And I mean, like, that's like the other thing about the G1 climax. Like, there's no air of specialness around a lot of the guys who are coming in now.
No.
Other than like Ryohei Oiwa, basically, because he does so much kind of old school stuff and he looks like he should have been in Big Japan in 2016.
You know, I was thinking about this as I was watching this Korakuen show from Dragon Gate that I really enjoyed, and I feel like the product is very fresh and I'm very excited by the All Japan integration that we saw and that we're going to see. But I was taking stock and it's like, all right, I'm completely disinterested in New Japan. I don't care. No one on that roster is over with me. The Gabe Kidd injury was a real bummer for me because he was somebody that even for all of his faults, I was still very invested in. And then you flip over to All Japan and they're having kind of a downer year in the ring. Now, again, I like what they're doing with Dragon Gate and that certainly has my attention. So, you know, I'll give them a little bit of a pass. And then you go to Noah, where there's a few matches that I haven't seen yet. I haven't had a chance to watch the back-to-back Korakuens that they did. I'm very intrigued by those GHC title matches, even though I know the results. I'd still like to check those out. And then I would like to watch the recent Eita and Shuji Kondo GHC junior title match, junior tag title match from Kobe Sambo Hall. That's very much on my level of a thing that I would care about. But I find the booking in Noah to be utterly atrocious, so they don't have my attention. Big Japan is dying any day now. DDT, I really liked at the start of the year, and I haven't kept up with, but I also haven't seen the buzz. I have no desire right now to really jump back into that. And as I started taking stock again of somebody
I feel like DDT, like the one interesting thing you really have is Jun Kasai's kid coming up. Like that'll be a fun
that's
debut.
Awesome. I really liked what they were doing at the start of the year, and then it would have been right around Mania that I would have fallen off with them, which is funny because that's when they were in the US. And I'm sure there's great stuff that I've missed, but I don't feel like I'm hearing the buzz that I heard about in January, February, March, April. And so taking stock of just the men's promotions in Japan, because again, I am a Stardom respecter, but not necessarily a Stardom viewer, just because I don't have time for much at all right now outside of Dragon Gate, but I'm taking stock of Japan and I'm going, man, like 2025 might be the lowest point that we've hit in Japan. I feel like I liked the COVID years of Noah more, and there was more exciting Shingo stuff in New Japan at that time, and All Japan has certainly had better years, and this Dragon Gate year I think is very, very good. I think I don't know, weighing it against 2024, if I prefer 2024 or 2025 at this point. I think there's still so much left to unfold in this calendar year that it's impossible for me to answer right now because I am super invested in this promotion, obviously. But otherwise, man, I was just thinking about how bleak Japan is and how if it wasn't for AEW TV that I'm really, really enjoying right now, and then the CMLL stuff that I'm a little behind on, but obviously I enjoy when I watch it, you know, the highs in 2025 are really high, but there is just a lot of middling nonsense that I do not care for.
Yeah, and I feel like both of us are in a position where even though we have a age difference, we do have kind of a little bit of, like, if we look at like 2025, what is out there necessarily in Japan that would like pull us away from other stuff that we would be doing, like the opportunity costs of like slogging through 11 nights of the G1 climax. Like, like being completely honest, is that what you want to do after having a Lollapalooza shift, is be like, well, I have to watch Evil versus Sonata right
no,
now?
No, but I just,
like,
I mean, I stopped watching Evil matches 5 years ago, and because I don't cover New Japan on a podcast, like, I'm like, I'll never watch that. I will never watch Evil if I don't have to. I'll never watch Sonata if I don't have to. I
add Ren Narita to that list after this
tournament. Oh my god, yeah, I have, yeah. But like, I'd add Umino to that list. Like, I don't like any of those guys.
Yeah, it's tough, but like, I feel like that if you like also, if we were talking about like some of the interesting stuff that was happening elsewhere in the Japanese wrestling landscape in 2023 and 2024, okay, so those were happening now, I don't know necessarily if it would feel like it would be like such like a breath of fresh air at this time. I feel like that everything kind of has reached a kind of this like terminal point within the scene in a lot of different ways.
I think New Japan being as stale as they are, being the industry leader, I do think,
and having a very cold tournament when they can't really afford it,
it casts a shadow over. Again, I'll keep this exclusive to the men's promotions, where you have New Japan, who is having a cold box office and a colder creative. And while Noah continues to do some very impressive things, and to Noah's credit, the run of Good Houses has lasted longer than I thought it would, even if I think the booking is only getting worse and worse. But it's tough when New Japan is what it is right now. Dragon Gate, I think, creatively is phenomenal. But they're not having the, you know, no one's confusing this for a white hot promotion right now. Noah has the opposite problem, and All Japan has had the year that All Japan's had. It's just like, man, you look on the men's side of things and it's bleak. It's not awesome. That kind of goes back to what we were talking about last week. But the good news is that, you know, while the houses are not what I think they should be, because again, I think this is the best book promotion in Japan this year, this Dragon Gate Cork and Hall show I thought was really, really enjoyable.
And to be fair, it seems like that there was at least a initial headwind business-wise, if you want to go minutely as Corkin to Corkin.
Yes, yeah, this one up. And also, you know, I guess the one benefit they have, and this, that I apologize if this sounds like I have pom-poms on when I say this, because I certainly don't want to sound like a cheerleader, but the building looked very good. And I would say for, you know, the 15 Corkins they run out of the year, 14 out of the 15 always look like they are well attended. Sometimes I'm a little surprised when that number comes in and it's 1200 instead of 1400, just eyeballing it. And again, ultimately that doesn't mean anything, but I also, you know, the state of Cork and Hall is not exactly a pleasant one, and you catch the wrong angle of a photo from insert promotion here and it can be pretty depressing. So it's nice to see a Dragon Gate show where the building looked as full as it was, and for the most part was as lively as it was. Although I do have one note as we talk about a match here, where I was surprised at how little the crowd reacted to a certain spot. Otherwise, again, building looked good. I thought crowd sounded good. And overall, I thought this was a pretty enjoyable show.
Yeah, like, I think for someone that at least recently, a lot of my wrestling consumption other than Dragon Gate is in bulk. Like, I bulk went through the last 2 weeks of AEW/Chicago residency over the last 2 weeks. And I have like greatly enjoyed that kind of product. There's something about a 3-hour Dragon Gate Corkin where maybe nothing for me hit the notebook for this show on Tuesday, but I thought overwhelmed, especially as like the big go home for Dangerous Gate, given what the card and the theme is for the show coming up in Kobe on the 11th. As a go home, this felt like that they really had everyone, at least in the major programs, have something towards that up and down the card, and at least set up your big highlight match outside of the title matches, and then, you know, going into this show now, like essentially now 10 days as of our time of recording, Case, I'm looking at this card and I, considering the turnaround and how things had been going out of Kobe World, I like look at this and I go, this feels like a really hot Dangerous Gate card coming up in 2 weeks.
I agree with that. So let's break down this Korakuen show. Next week, we'll do a full-on Dangerous Gate preview. We'll also do a review of the Kobe Sambo Hall show coming up this week. But I want to talk about this Korakuen show.
Yeah, let's do it. So this was the Gate of Adventure in Tokyo. The announced attendance was 1250. We're going to take it from the main event back just because they'll let us also talk about the changes as it relates to the Dangerous Gate card. And when they made this a show announcement, it was, and especially after the events of Kobe World, there was like one match that I was really anticipating, and we got this right away in Korakuen. The main event of Shumare versus Madoka Kakuta and Ishin, both sides still technically representing Z-Brats, and Madoka Kakuta getting the win via KO referee stoppage with a devastating hip attack, just almost recreating the finish out of Kobe World. After a blindside lariat that he landed on Shun Skywalker, they almost bring out the stretcher, but Shun decides to taunt instead, and our Dreamgate champion in his first Korakuen appearance is left bleeding with his mask askew, and Madoka Kakuta, as the heel leader now, is firmly entrenched going into their Dreamgate match on the 17th.
I think there's a lot of impressive things in this match. I think off the bat, just the sheer amount of things they accomplished in this match, between not altering Kakuta's presentation, which I think is great, because I think sometimes wrestling companies might have a tendency to overthink these things, but we've seen since May he's had one standard approach to all of his matches, and he's continued that here. They aren't altering the course for this title match. He isn't doing anything different, and that's what they need to do, and I really like that. So you have Kakuta as an entity on his own, and I think he passed this match with flying colors. I think you have the beginning of what is now very, very clearly a Shun Skywalker babyface turn, and it's been years since we've seen him in this role, and I thought, given where his character is at, which is one that at the beginning of the show, you know, Kakuta came out and cut the promo with all of Z-Brats minus Shun and Himare and said that these are the only official members of Z-Brats. So we haven't seen the costume change, the colors change, the unit change, but we now know the path that Shun Skywalker is going on, and I thought he worked a match that was very befitting of that, where, you know, he threw violent chair shots. He was still Shun Skywalker, but the edge that was there, the shortcuts that were there, were largely absent, and that was nice to see. So you have, you know, the individualism of Kakuta, the individualism of Skywalker. You have those two building to their Dreamgate match, which I thought really worked. I thought their chemistry down the stretch before the finish, which I want to talk about here, obviously, in just a minute. I liked all of that. And then you have this other element, which was, we all knew what Shun and Kakuta were going to do in this match. I think going into this, we had a pretty good outline of what their interactions were going to look like. But before this match took place, we did not know that at Dangerous Gate, we'd be getting Ishin versus Himare in a singles match. And to see those two go at it the way that they did, the physicality that Ishin brought on, which is always great to see, because as we talked about last week, you know, sometimes he has the curse of Kurt Angle, where he can be so goofy and over the top that he loses that intensity, which is always a shame to see. But he brought that with Himare, and I thought Himare did such a brilliant job of fighting back and looking tough. And as we hit the 11-month mark of his career, this was one of the more complete Himare performances that we've seen. Also notable, another Himare Korakuen Hall main event. So let us all keep that in mind as we are voting for Rookie of the Year in The Observer later on this year. But on the whole, even with the finish, this was a 4-star match for me. I thought these guys went out there, and not only was the in-ring action as strong as it was, but as somebody that is as invested in the story and this promotion as I am, I was just amazed by how much they accomplished in this match.
Yeah, everything in this match served a purpose towards the end. I had this at 4 flat as well. Easy kind of match of the night for me. But even with like the way that the match broke down to the outside with Shun throwing chairs, it all felt like all incredibly deserved and well executed. And just to kind of go a little bit back towards your point about Shun's impending face turn, the thing that I going to find fascinating and the thing that I really liked post Kobe World is that he's still very clearly still acting Rudo, and it's not like a sudden twist and now he's being like the stoic good guy, like it's revisiting 2021 all over again, where it that can't possibly happen. And it's just the command of someone like Shun Skywalker to noticeably just taking us more towards of a gradient kind of style of face change or face turn, I think has been really remarkable. But I think the nice thing about now that you are having that face turn happening kind of simultaneously for Shun and Himare is that you're now getting to see some now kinds of teamwork that you weren't able to see during Rey de Parejas when they're purely Rudo, and you would not have like exciting Rudo teamwork, like the aided Shiranu backflip DDT that Shun Mare hit in this kind of thing, like getting able to see kind of like those fun flourishes that you wouldn't see with him as pure Z-Brat's heels was a really fun kind of added thing in this match.
Oh, 1,000,000%. I mean, that was one of my big takeaways from this match is that Dragon Gate sometimes, I don't want to say sometimes, I think especially in this current era, more often than not, they hold back on sometimes doing the obvious and giving us exactly what we want. And this feels like a thing where if you could project out into the spring, let's say Rey de Parejas is in March again, by that point, I would imagine that Shun and Himare would be in a full-fledged unit, you know, 3 other guys alongside them, 5-person unit. And I get the vibe that if that's going to be what happens, then it'll be Shun and a partner in one block and Himare and a partner in the other block. And we'll watch the entire tournament and go like, man, what would happen if Shun and Himare were teaming up? In watching this match and seeing them start to lean into that babyface role, it was fantastic. And it maybe just wants Shun and Himare to rip through another Rey de Parejas tournament, but this time it's babyfaces, because I think that is... It is very exciting. For as much as we've enjoyed Himare over the last 10 months, it's very exciting to see him now slowly transition to this babyface role and go, oh, naturally likable youngster. Got it. I'm in.
It's as if the last 11 months didn't happen, you know?
Shun, you feel the weight of this turn and you feel like mm-hmm. he's not all the way there. And that's what should happen. I mean, that is the delicate dance of this Shun Skywalker turn. And that's why I've pushed back on this idea of him joining D-Courage, because this is an instance where the quality of this promotion and the things that we've all come to expect from Dragon Gate is going to create a hurdle for this promotion. As a viewer, when this turn is fully fleshed out, I'm expecting a level of depth and intrigue and story that I would not expect from any other promotion. But for wrestlers on this roster to once again team with Shun Skywalker, it is going right. to have to be explained, and it's going to have to be justified, or else it's going to be incredibly disappointing. And so I'm glad that he didn't come out looking like Ricky Morton in this match. You know, he came out more so looking like a softer Shun Skywalker, and I think we'll see that gradient scale slide even more as we head into Dangerous Gate. But I really like the way they handled that. Whereas with Himare, once they established that he was loyal to Shun Skywalker, and we should talk about that, Himare at one point in the match hit Skywalker.
Yeah, the misfire miss.
Yes, yeah, he hit Skywalker with an errant kick. Ishin got all excited, set Shun up to get hit with a Himare super kick, and Himare instead blasted Ishin's head off. That is the spot that I noted, I referenced earlier. You know, there was one spot on this show that I thought would get a bigger reaction than it did. Mm-hmm. And to me, that was the spot. I was a little surprised by how subdued Corkin was when Ishin set up Skywalker for that super kick. That is just something to note. I have no conclusion to draw from there. There's nothing to take away from that. It's just something to note in the moment. But with Himare, he can be a little bit more fired up, fully fledged babyface going forward. Shun is going to take some time, and I like the way they're handling it so far.
Yeah, and I feel like the taking time, and as you said, like the gradient thing and the amount of care with the promotion. But the part of the reason why I feel so repellent to the idea of him and Shun, him and Himare and D Courage are coming out of that, it just does not feel like an earned thing in a way that, especially with like Daya, I know that the Shun counter is, oh, you ultimately benefited from that kind of situation. I just, it feels like that that gradiency would have to be like something that would happen late next year for Daya to be okay with, you know?
Yeah. Because I mean, they can get there. I can fully buy into
a universe,
Shun and Daya and Yoshioka are teaming, but it has to be explained, and I think there has to be some trial and error there. Now, purely jumping ahead and hopefully not to pontificate to such a gross degree, you know, what I don't think I want to see, I'll put that caveat there. I don't think I want this of the Shun and Himare unit trial series where they come out with Vibes and they do the dance and they come out on the skateboards and they team with D Courage and they come out with ugly gear and then lose with Love and Peace because that's the only thing that they're good for at this point. I don't know if I want to see them dip their toe into every pond until they find a unit. I would rather a story come up organically in which they are forced to start a unit and people siphon off from the units that they're currently in. To me, I think that's the more enjoyable story there. But that is all one of those things where we'll just have to see how that plays out.
No, I'm with you on that. And I felt like in a Dreamgate kind of focus for this kind of match, to kind of put a bow on it, we knew the direction of where things were going as soon as Kakuta turned on Shun after he got the Dreamgate belt. And at least I feel like as we are getting there and as this kind of, in a lot of intents and purposes, being the go-home match for Dangerous Gate, I really feel in a good spot for this match. Yeah, it is the biggest match now for like Shun, especially after the turn, and you're doing that 5 weeks afterwards. But this is also, as I like to remind people, the biggest building Dragon Gate will be in for the rest of the year. And how are you kind of feeling about that as like the angle going home for this Dreamgate feud, I guess?
Well, I'm really into it. I guess my thought on the finish is, you know, some people are saying that it looked like Shun got knocked out on the lariat and then Kakuta hit a hip attack, and for precautionary reasons, they called the match off. I am in the line of thinking, based on what we've seen with Shun Skywalker this summer, that this was the planned finish and that he has, I don't want to say lost his mind, but has really dipped his toe into shades of gray of reality and work. Where are you at on the finish of this match before I talk about the Dreamgate match itself?
Oh, I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I think that Shun, I thought it was pretty clear that he was obviously selling through it. You know, I mean, because just he was doing his like the hand clutch thing, and he was very like visibly trying to give like things to not look like someone who was knocked out, I felt like. But I thought that waving it off there, especially given what happened at Kobe World between Kakuta and SMJ, it felt incredibly deserved. And in a lot of ways, one of those little things with Kakuta is that I've always kind of felt like the hip attack should be a knockout move, and I feel very a little bit happiness to seeing that now it's being treated as, oh, Kakuta is now just clear on knocking people out with his ass now with the hip attack. And it's something that I feel like should have always been the case, to be honest, with the amount of that.
It looked great that the lariat rocked Shun the way that it did, but the hip attack is the move that ended the match. I really like that, and I that's why I lean into the idea that this was an intentional finish and this is the way they drew it up. And, you know, it's a dangerous game to play when you start leaning this heavy, and I don't know if worked shoot is the right term, but worked injury in the way that Shun Skywalker has. It's high risk, high reward, but they got my attention with this finish. You know, I liked this more than I was worried this match was going to end in a DQ. I really liked the referee stoppage. So everything they've done along the way has really worked. And I think in the same way that we went into Kobe World, you know, maybe 50-50 in the finish of that match, maybe 60-40 Shun. I think maybe wishfully thinking I was more 60-40 Yamato, but we now head into the Shun versus Kakuta match. And Mike, I don't know where you are, but I feel like this is a true 50-50 result. And this is a show that I'm going to have to watch live because I am really interested to see what they do in this main event.
Yeah, I feel like that they are... I'm pretty firmly on Kakuta getting the belt here and Shun
really
getting a zero belt. Yeah, a zero key. Yeah, it just kind of feels like a situation, especially with how they are treating like the heel unit and Kakuta, that you're incorporating the face turn and you can revisit the matchup down the road, you know?
Absolutely.
And I feel like after the year of Yamato, and really, I mean, if you want to think about it, essentially like somewhat face control of this belt dating back to Dead or Alive 2024, it does kind of feel like to me, it's time for maybe not a lengthy heel run, but a substantial one. And with the way that Kakuta is getting booked, and especially with this, it feels like to me, maybe 75-25 Kakuta right now, 10 days out.
I'm certainly into that. You know, I think the idea of Shun being a zero defense champion here is interesting in the micro and the macro, because I think in real time, you know, that sort of swift transfer of a title, it ushers in really the first long-term heel champion since Kai at the beginning of 2022. You could say Shun Skywalker a year later, but that was a transitional run to set up Kakuta. And now we're looking at a point where two out of the three Shun Skywalker Dreamgate runs could be transitional reigns to set up Kakuta, which I think is a really interesting story. And then you also have the idea that he's now been a three-time Dreamgate champion. There's only been a handful of people in history that have held the belt three times, let alone four. And we know that barring catastrophe, he'll at least be a four-time Dreamgate champion in his career. So there's a lot of long-term story stuff that I feel is proper story and not fan lore with Skywalker and Kakuta. I think it's really interesting that in 2023, Shun won the belt solely so that he could lose it to Kakuta Dead or Alive, and it was the perfect story, and that has been a little bit lost due to history just because of how poorly the Kakuta reign went from the moment he won the belt through the Shimizu match. But in real time, it was like, oh my god, this wasn't a home run. This was a grand slam. They did everything perfectly with this Kakuta Dreamgate win at Dead or Alive. And now you've got a chance where it's obviously not at the same show, but there's a chance that Skywalker loses the Dreamgate belt to him again. And I think that is incredibly interesting. Whereas if Kakuta loses, you know, then you have the obvious Shun Ishin match. You have maybe a Shun versus Valletta match if he comes back later this year. You have Shun versus Minoru. You could do Shun and Jason again. You could do Shun and Kato. I mean, he could run through the rest of Zebrats in Dreamgate title matches without touching KZ, without touching Strong Machine J, without touching Yoshioka. And I think we have to keep an eye on Yoshioka here because he is certainly being primed for something, whether that be a Twin Gate match or a Dreamgate match. I'm not sure just yet. Obviously he's got the Twin Gate match at Dangerous Gate, but the immovable objects that are Jason Lee and Coach Minoru might have something to say about that. So there's just a lot in the air. I think either way they go is a good direction, which is a nice way to feel about a Dreamgate match. I felt the same way at Kobe World. I feel the same way here, where I have enough faith in the booking of this promotion right now to where if you're signing me up for seven more months of Shun Skywalker as champion, I'm in. If you're signing me up for Madoka Kakuta's second Dreamgate run, I think that character is so interesting and his work has been so good that I'm in.
Yeah, and I think with that, we should like give a little bit of credit to someone that at least in when we would talk about his handling of this title in the past, I think that we have, and I think a lot of this is also trusting your quarterback and Pip and putting Tom Brady back in there essentially for a year. But I think that a certain level of credit has to be given to Ryo Saito for just like how well that things have kind of been in this division when that clearly had been his overwhelming weakness for the first few years of his booking.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. I mean, we went through a very long stretch there where, especially if you weren't into the Yoshioka title run, which you and I were and are still ardent defenders of, and I think it's crazy that people didn't like it, but there's a 4-year period there where his biggest knock was that the Dreamgate stuff got too cute. I still think Luis Monte has never recovered from winning the Dreamgate belt in the way that he did. And quite honestly, I don't know if he'll ever recover from that. There's been a lot of damage done at the top of the card. And one of, I think, the reoccurring themes in 2021 and 2022 and for part of 2023 was that this was an undercard and mid-card promotion. You and I got the most enjoyment out of those things on a Dreamgate show. And what has flipped because of this Yamato title run, which is an absolute credit to him, is we are back at a point in time where I think the Dreamgate belt has again become one of the most prestigious titles in wrestling. We're coming off of an all-time great Dreamgate run. We have all the makings of something incredibly exciting happening in August, whether that paves the way for a Skywalker all-time great Dreamgate run, or if we get a story-heavy run with Kakuta here, I think either of those things would be super, super interesting. So I am incredibly happy with where we're at with the Dreamgate scene right now, and this Dangerous Gate match feels huge.
Yeah, and as you work your way back down Corkin and also in a way kind of work your way down what will likely be the running list of the card at Dangerous Gate, you had a semi-main event of D-Courage, Yuki Yoshioka, Dragon Daya, and Ryo Tanaka versus Z-Bratz, Kota Minoru, Jason Lee, and Kai Yoshioka getting the win over Lee with a high fly flow, setting up original D-Courage versus Minnow Lee for the Twin Gate belts at Dangerous Gate, with once again someone beckoning Yuki Yoshioka to be the ace. And it does kind of feel like as you look down the card that the Yuki Yoshioka kind of comeback has now officially started. It turns out that he needed a pep talk from his big brother from Gifu, Hiroshi Tanahashi, and it at least kind of feels a bit like that they're starting the rehab course for him and going into Dangerous Gate having at least two of the most dominant tag teams of this era of the Twin Gate division being up top fighting for the belts in D-Courage and Minoli feels like at least a big match for these belts, at least in this era of Dragon Gate.
Yes, absolutely. The Yuki Yoshioka rehab project is now in full effect, and I think we're going to see him just continue to squash people like a bug with this high fly flow until otherwise noted. I would be stunned if coming out of Tokyo next weekend that it's not Jason Lee eating a high fly flow, as that's easy for me to say, and mentally finally dropping these Twin Gate belts. It just seems like now is the time to do it. He's got a little bit of juice. The Tanahashi thing, I don't know if we spent enough time on coming out of Kobe World about just how funny it is. You and I you and I talking about the G1 and all the issues we're having with that at the top of this episode, and Hiroshi Tanahashi saying, "Hey, Dragon Gate wrestler, here's my signature move. Do with this what you will." Truly incredible scenes, incredible banter, one of the funniest things I've ever seen. I'm still laughing about it. I apologize to the Super J cast, but absolutely hilarious.
And like the other side of this, now that is like in clear perspective, he's not having a retirement match against any of the young guys now, like because they wouldn't have Tanahashi wouldn't have done that at Kobe World if it was going to be him in like a crying thing to Yuya Uemura going, "You know what? You're the one to go on with the high fly flow after a retirement match." He wouldn't be giving that move to Yoshioka if he was going to plan on doing it as a bigger thing for New Japan. I feel
it's just so funny.
That's the thing that came to me in this match. This tag team match was, wow, it's not just that this happened and it's funny. It's, oh my God, that means that it's probably not going to happen on the other side.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
And for Yoshioka, you know, it's one of these incredibly simple things in wrestling, and I can't, even after all my years of watching it and analyzing it, I can't explain why it worked the way that it did, but, you know, it seemed like he had a pep in his step, but also just as a viewer, all of a sudden I cared about Yuki Yoshioka more than I had, you know, since he returned 6 months ago, because he's got Hiroshi Tanahashi's move now. It worked for me.
And he's looking like super cut right now.
I
think he's about to bulk up. I think he's about to massively bulk up.
This is a point I brought up in the Discord, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because it's one of two things. And because it's Yoshioka, and maybe I'm being weird with a capital W about Yoshioka, and maybe I have been since his return, but I watched him come out to the ring, and I, like, my stomach started to hurt almost, because Yoshioka looks so thin, and there's a
chance. He's listed at 78 kilos thin.
Okay. Previously, do you know what he would have been around?
Like 86, 87.
Okay. I only mentioned it because he looks so thin, and I started getting a little bit concerned, because one of the things that Jay has hammered home, not only on commentary but on this show, is because of his eye injury, he had to cease all training at points in his recovery, and it's really hard for him to train the way that he used to, because, you know, his eye could explode, which I understand being tentative about. And so he came out to the ring, and my initial reaction was like, oh man, I wonder if his eye is giving him trouble, because this looks like a guy that hasn't exactly been pumping iron in the same way that the rest of this roster has. And then I saw the point in the Discord of, well, maybe he's cutting, so he's about to bulk up, and that's entirely fair. And again, maybe I'm being weird about Yoshioka, but he did look really thin, and it was almost a distraction for the first half of this match. I thought this match was funny in that I thought it started really slow, and about halfway through, I was like, man, maybe I'm done with D-Courage and Z-Brass. I don't know if I need to see these teams wrestle anymore. And then the second half of the match happened, and boy, was I back in. It was a testament to how hard these six guys worked. I thought Daya was excellent here. I thought Yoshioka looked very good. Tanaka, I am out of superlatives for. I think he is just utterly phenomenal. And the Z-Brass side brought it as well. So this ended up being a very enjoyable trios match, but I still remain slightly concerned about Yuki Yoshioka.
Yeah, I guess I didn't really go to that length of thinking about his eye exploding and working out. I just like looked at it and I was like, man, there's not an ounce of fat on this guy. And he does look noticeably leaner, which usually means that he's doing a cut before bulk or, you know, something like that. I guess really for me that this match was like a reminder of is how great of a closing stretch team D-Courage is.
Yeah,
because and some of that is also Yoshioka, I think, being like one of the best people at like the final fire up closing stretch in all of wrestling. I thought that that was like one of the best things that he was doing in that Dreamgate run, was the way that his closing stretch just felt like, okay, you reach that point with Yuki Yoshioka and he has to like unleash the battle hook and put you down for the count with a frog splash. Like, and it kind of felt like this. And also like the little thing where now he's like leaping over the top rope before doing this and moving like a little bit Tanahashi-esque, like it just had like an air of, oh, he's back now. Or like, oh, he's starting to come back now. And that was just like a nice aspect of it. I want to touch a little bit more on Ryoya when we talk about the Mochizuki match, because it's so interesting where this guy is at right now in his career and with how everything is in the promotion, where it kind of almost is in a way that he's like developing a little bit of a prickish attitude about things.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, no, I mean, look, that's always to me been the charm of Tanaka, is I've seen a mean streak in him that I think will come out. I mean, in the same way that Himari's been positioned as a heel and I think is a natural babyface, and just because he's so talented, he's been such a good heel, I think Tanaka is the inverse of that, where we've only seen him in one mode, but when he eventually turns, I think people are going to be floored by how naturally he's a phenomenal heel.
Yeah, he just has something that I think is like naturally makes you want to kind of instinctively see someone punch him in the face.
I agree. I'm very excited for what he's doing with Mochizuki. Let's talk about that now. Let's talk about the Brave Gate now.
Yeah, so coming out of Buyuden and his defense against Yuen Masioka, Ryo Tanaka already had a match booked with Masaki Mochizuki at Oda War Gymnasium. It's Mochizuki's first and probably only attempt at the Dangerous Gate, as Jay really interestingly kind of laid out. He reached the point of middle age where he's like, I have abs, and I don't know if I'm going to have them again, so I'm going to keep this up. And Tanaka, in his kind of way, coming out after a match against Hulk and Kagatora, the opener of the show, after Mochizuki just basically took Kakatora's head off with a closing stretch there, that was really fun. And in a way, he's like reinvented. Ryoya is going about this in a way that he's claiming he wants to kind of reinvent the belt in his image, like, and clearly going on a untraditional path as champion, basically, after taking the belt from UT, not facing anyone who has ever had a Brave Gate match, at least through his first two defenses and the one coming up against Mochizuki at Dangerous Gate.
I think the fact that we're getting two major Mochizuki title matches in 2025 is something that has to be acknowledged and celebrated, because every time he wrestles for the Dream Gate belt, we feel like it could be the last time that he wrestles for the Dreamgate belt, which is always such a bummer because he is so, so good in that role. And, you know, it's not like the quality in those has dipped. And then you go back.
And he's like the last one of that original generation who's still challenging for it, too.
Absolutely. And then you go back and you look at the fact that he hasn't had a Twin Gate match since March of 2023, which was Shimizu and KZ versus Mochizuki and Mochizuki Jr., which was on a Memorial Gate show. That is a 4.5-star match. I think not enough people saw that. Absolutely incredible match. And then you go and you look at his Triangle Gate history, and he had a Triangle Gate match with Fuji and Awashi last year at Gate of Origin, and he had an M3K versus Zebrats Triangle Gate match at Korakuen at the beginning of 2024. That was during his anniversary weekend, but it's been a few years now since we've had a really, really hyped Mochizuki Triangle Gate match even. So to have two singles matches with him in the calendar year where he's wrestling for singles titles is incredibly special. The fact that they're telling this story where he's cut down weight, he can now challenge for the Brave Gate belt, and we have Tanaka, which I think makes us all the more interesting. You know, with all due respect to UT, who I thought was a very good champion, with all due respect to somebody like Hyo, Tanaka fits the mold of what the traditional Brave Gate champion has been, I think more so than a lot of the other recent champions. And for him to do something so out of left field here, as we continue to talk about, you know, fixing the Brave Gate division, what can they do differently? Should it be an age limit instead of a weight limit? Should it be this instead of that? Whatever it is, Tanaka versus Mochi could not feel fresher. This is something totally different. I'm fascinated to see how Mochizuki works this match, because I feel like we have a 30-year resume that says, okay, he's approaching uncharted waters. We've never seen him in this environment before. Thus, Mochizuki is probably going to do things that we've never seen him do before. This all works out great. I am so, so excited to see what this match looks like, because I think it's in the hands of one of the smartest wrestlers ever, and also Ryoya Tanaka, who's on a real hot streak right now.
Yeah, and I think you make a really good point about Ryoya being kind of an archetype of Brave Division's past, because as soon as you said that, I had like a image of my head of what a Tanaka versus Masato Yoshino match would look like. I'm like, yeah, no, he would have fit in exactly in 2006 in that kind of place. And the great unknown with someone who, at least if you treat like his matches as kind of his theories of pro wrestling, I've been working on getting my book scanner together, and one of the books I have is Masaki Mochizuki's books that he wrote a couple of years ago that I'm going to go through. But until I am able to go through that book, what I have to go on is his matches, and he is one of the most interesting minds in pro wrestling history, if not of like his or any era. And the fact that now he is going into a weight division belt that has always been kind of seen as the battle of the very quick and very precise is going to be such like an interesting conundrum that I have no idea how this match will go in Ota Wharton City Gymnasium. But the fact that Masaaki Mochizuki is going to be in this match and he's doing this at 55 is one of those things that, like, going up and down this card, I don't know if I'm more excited about this than Kobe World with Shun Skywalker versus Yamato, but at least in this way, this is something that I did not know I wanted until it was put on paper. And now I just can't wait to see what might happen when Masaaki Mochizuki have a Brave Gate match at Dangerous Gate.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, ultimately the solution to whatever woes this division has had is not let's put the 55-year-old in title matches. I don't necessarily think that is the greatest mode of operation long term, and I think you would agree that even if we don't entirely know what the fix is, it does feel like we still need something with the Brave Gate belt. You go back through this history and it's not exactly a rich one before Daya got his hands on it last year, and then the belt was on ice for another 5 months, and then, you know, UT had his two great matches, Tanaka took over, and now we're here. So it's one of those things you can enjoy in a vacuum. I think Tanaka versus Mochizuki is going to be incredible. I can't wait to see it, and hopefully it is the beginning of a company that is now more willing to take risks on the Brave Gate division than they were previously.
Yeah, because now, like, there is the mindset of somehow, let's say Mochi wins, it's not going to take Junior much to get back under that weight. And yet,
do you think that's the game here? Do you think Mochizuki has a shot at winning?
I don't really. I think this is solidify Tanaka, at least right now, because Junior feels like that he is now a lost post, at least for a little bit. So I don't think he's going to get built back up into the division that quick. And Mochizuki as Brave Gate champion is such a question of where do you go for that afterwards? Like, does he start then just defending against Daiki, Yanagiuchi, and Ryo Fuda? Like, is that what happens? Because I have no idea where you go with him at the belt. I think it's just a interesting way to give a kind of cool caveat to Tanaka in this Brave Gate reign.
I agree with that.
And as we continue to get back on course with Korakuen, the rematch from Luis Montes would be 25th anniversary match. Flamita and Monte versus Los Golpeadores, Alpha Wolf and Dragon Bane of Pro Wrestling Noah. After what happened in the previous match with the injury no contest, decided to have a rematch of that here. Dragon Bane got the win over Flamita with a shooting star press, and that immediately set up Los Golpeadores to challenge for the Triangle Gate at Dangerous Gate. But their new partner that they're going to have is they had to get someone who is super crazy. So it's going to be super crazy. And because there's going to be six Mexican wrestlers in the match case, they decided to do it under Lucha Libre Clásica 2 out of 3 falls. And that is your last title match that has been signed for Dangerous Gate.
I'm going to throw a comparison at you. Tell me if it makes sense or not. If the standard of execution in Dragon Gate is akin to Gabe Sapolsky era Ring of Honor, which I think makes sense given the fruitful relationship that they had for a few years there in the 2000s, the Alpha Wolf, Dragon Bane, Luis Monte, Flamita matches feel like they're out of the Jersey All-Pro universe. Does that make sense?
Yes, because I feel like you would see like the rec center and it would be like that kind of taping versus the Ring of Honor, no house lights and Gabe's light trees and everything being super washed out. Like this match should have happened with, like, I'm forgetting who was the guy. Fat Frank was the owner of Jersey All Pro.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, and then right after that, there's going to be a Teddy Hart versus Loki match. Yeah, no, exactly.
It's just, you know, I thought their Buyuden match was incredible, and I was really disappointed at the time that that match happened on that show and not on a proper Dragon Gate show, because I felt like it was a match where Flamita and Monte had the reins, and that was a Dragon Gate quality tag match that quite honestly was like a Twin Gate quality tag match. I mean, I thought they worked at such a high level. in this match, while enjoyable, by no means did I think that this was a bad contest between four incredibly talented wrestlers. It lacked the polish that I want from a Cork and Hall Dragon Gate show. It was really sloppy at times. It was really messy at times. It felt dangerous in the wrong way at times. There was something about it that even if I recognize from bell to bell, I watched it and enjoyed it. I enjoyed what I saw. There was something that was unsatisfying about this match by the time that it was over.
No, I get that sentiment. It does, in a way, kind of feel out of context. And sometimes you could see like an out of context match completely blow people's minds, like the Panther Brothers versus the Lucha Solos at DGUSA.
Flamina and Bandido versus the Rascals when they came in.
Right. Like sometimes, like, and I think that's a good comp, like when Mexablood came through, like, and especially going up against the Rascals, it really kind of felt like, oh, this is that they're onto something here. It's maybe not as crisp or as clean as maybe a match further down the card that is more precise and everything is hit to like certain things, but they were like pushing an envelope in a way that was happening. And instead of this, like instead of feeling like a Dragon Gate match, it feels like something that you would see almost on a WrestleCon super show kind of thing.
Yeah. And I don't really want that. You know, I feel like these matches have become diminishing returns. They peaked with the first one and they haven't figured out a way to naturally follow it up ever since. Now, maybe that is me going, well, okay, you know, we've seen the one match, we've seen the second match, now this is the third one, where maybe it would have been nice to have that Noah team work a little bit more in a prominently Rudo type scenario in this match. I think that would have been enjoyable. But now we're just trying to top the moves that we've done in the previous encounters, but they haven't been able to top what they did in the first match. The first match is still far and away the best of the bunch. And now it's like, all right, you know, the super crazy thing is fine. I, you keep Super Crazy and Bendito out of the ring with one another, and I'm sure it'll be an okay match, but I'm a little less juiced up for that than I should be, only because I'm not seeing a scenario in which that Triangle Gate match is better than this match, and this match wasn't as good as what I've seen them do previously. So now I'm sick of it. I want these two teams to go their own way.
Yeah, and there's the aspect of two out of three falls eating up time that could be going to other things on that show too.
Yeah, well, you know, the Dangerous Gate, not to jump ahead because we'll do a full preview next week, but you know, you're going to give Homari and Ishin 10 minutes to start off, and then it's not an incredibly deep undercard. So you're going to get
the sponsor match is going to take like 15 minutes.
Oh, man. I mean, I know there's a lot of guys in that match, but I think they're going to make quick work of that. But then it's like, yeah, you know, you're going to get
everything all together, because they're going to do like a presentation and it always like slogs it down afterwards. Like, it's going to be like about a quarter hour given to that. But the rest of that, no, you're right about that eight man not taking much time. And it's not like Dragon Gate versus All Japan will get more than like 10, 15 minutes.
And I don't see this match eating up more than 12 or 13 minutes. I think they're going to do two quick falls to start off. You know, they'll have a flash pin here, a flash pin there, and then they'll do one final big fall. And I think it'll be an okay Triangle Gate match. The interesting thing, and I'm only just now thinking about this as we're talking about it, because I admittedly hadn't put a ton of thought into the scenario here, is I think we all assumed, and again, I was told in May, hey, Monte is going to be teaming with Bendito all summer, and then he's going to go home and get a vacation after Kobe World. And I have no reason to believe that at one point that wasn't the plan. I heard that from a very reliable source. So something changed along the way to where not only is Monte not getting a vacation, Flamita staying through Kobe World, Bendito staying through Kobe World. We left Kobe World going, okay, well, they're going to get, you know, one successful defense, and then they'll lose the belts at Dangerous Gate to, you know, whether it's Love and Peace or Z-Bratch or Paradox, whatever it is. But I don't see any scenario in which the NOAA team wins these Triangle Gate belts. So I think they're going to stick around Team Mexico, that is, for even longer, which is fine because it keeps Flamita in Japan. And I would never let that man go home if it were up to me. But I'm only just now realizing they're going to win this match.
Yeah, no, I just can't see them doing it. It's like so recent since they did like both the Twin Gate and the Triangle Gate going over there, you know, like for good extended periods of time. So I just can't see that. The one thing I will say, it's jumping around a little bit on Cork, and I thought Bendito, it does seem like he's kind of like the learning curve is, well, like he's adapted to it now. Like I thought that was one of his better performances against Natural Vibes. I thought he looked really good there.
It was one of those where it felt like KZ was the wind beneath his wings, and I thought those two had nice chemistry together.
But at least that's giving enough encouraging signs for someone like Bendito having much longer tour. I mean, we've seen the positive results of longer time and working that kind of schedule before. So I think that's a great opportunity. Like the fact that it was originally going to be 2 months, and now suddenly it looks like we're talking about 4 months for him. So
Which is great. Again, I'm rooting for the guy. I would love to see it work out. I'm still not entirely there, but the KZ thing and the Rita chemistry there's encouraging signs there. I will say, if Super Crazy wasn't the third man, if it was, you know, Bane and Wolf and somebody else, I could see them, just for the sake of shaking things up, having them go over on Team Mexico. But I'm not, for as tight as Super Crazy and Ultimo Dragon are, I don't think they're going to give Crazy the Triangle Gate belts.
No. Like, this never would have happened, but if it was like Los Galopadores and then Overdrive the Mirage kicks up, then I'm going like, okay, Eita's back and he's getting the Triangle Gate right now. So like that would have put me more towards the idea that the NOAA team was going to win, is if anyone who had more of a Dragon Gate affiliation was their third.
I agree with that.
Let's go back, because I touched on it very briefly, but I think we should take, just because of the post-match promo that happened after the 8-man tag, we should take Kazama Kimura's debut match and
let's
the 8-man together.
Yep, absolutely. All right. Let's go.
So the debut of Kazuma Kimura versus Benkei was match 3 on this show. Benkei wins with a spear. Kazuma Kimura is from Chiba. He's a former judoka and sambo player who only went to college and did judo because he wanted to train, prepare himself for pro wrestling. And the match that got him into pro wrestling, his dad was a lifelong fan, was Jackie Funky Kame versus SB Kento for Open the Brave Gate in the fall of 2021 at Kobe Sambo Hall. It was a fun debut with Benkei notably winning with a spear. I think there's a lot to really like about Kazuma Kimura. He kind of feels a little bit more of like a traditional old school Japanese wrestler in a way, but adapting with the speed with Ben. I thought it was no Hamari versus Masaki Mochizuki, but I thought it was a good, fun debut match for someone who's kind of come about really quickly through the dojo system.
Alpha male, no anime haircut. It certainly, I think, raised both of our eyebrows when we saw that he was debuting against Benkei, and then you saw him in the ring with Ben, and you completely understood why they were doing that, because I think in the same way that when Kato debuted, they had to be really careful with him because they weren't having Kato win everything right away, but Kato was so much more physically imposing than some of the people he was in the ring with. You had the same scenario here with Kimura, where had he not debuted against Ben, had he debuted against even, say, Kagetora, I think it would have been really hard for me to buy into like whatever story they were going to tell there. But with Ben, it was perfect. He's rough around the edges. I think his debut was somewhere between reminding me of what we saw with the early glimpses of Yoshiki Kato and T and Revolution. You know, I think the presentation and the package and the movements all sort of remind me of those two debuts in recent vintage. And I would say maybe the third comparison point is Ben, where Ben was somebody that immediately had our attention. He came in, He was not the best wrestler of his class ever. You know, Shun very early on, Hyo very early on, I think were far more impressive than Ben was in the ring. But Ben had a look and Ben had a charisma that greatly aided in his quick escalation up the card. And what we're seeing here is that they very clearly feel the same way about Kimura that they did Ben. This is, you know, trial by fire in the same way that Ben got put in the Summer Adventure Tag League 2016. They are throwing Kimura in with some big dogs. And the exciting thing was, far more than the debut match, was the angle where he got involved with Paradox and the All Japan guys. And you know it was good because Jay sounded like he was about to jump through the screen. He was so excited that Kimura was ready for that spot and lived up to the hype in that moment. And that was really great to see. So when you combine the debut match, which I thought was strong, weak finish, strong debut match, with the post-match angle, I mean, I, you know, Mike, we have another guy to get really excited about. I don't know what else to say. There is another guy that we can absolutely get fired up about now.
Yeah, this is like I immediately told Joe Lanza, I know you don't really like the pretty boys. Yoshiki Kato might be for you. Kazuma Kimura, if there's any chance of getting Joe Lanza to give Dragon Gate a honest shot in 2026, you might be the guy into the future. Because yeah, no, like he looks like much more kind of put together and like in a similar way where Akihiro Sahara is older than him. He comes off more young than a guy like Kimura, who just, he's 85 kilos on debut. He's probably never going to make a Brave weight. I mean, you're honestly looking to see how long it takes him to approach 90 and then 100 kilos and be like an honest, true to God heavyweight. It's going to be fun. And it's kind of continues in a trend of, at least in the last 5 years, I would say, I mean, dating back really like Shoya Sato, getting some more guys who are not in the Dragon Gate or the Dragon System prototype of what you expect out of that dojo in Kobe is fun to see. I mean, it is these people that are not necessarily what you expect, and is where you get your Shingo Takagis. So I'm not saying that this guy is going to have a career like Shingo Takagi, but it's just nice to kind of see that diversity in place coming out of the dojo.
Well, there's always going to be a spot for guys on the roster like this, and it's why I'm not panicked about Yoshiki Kato. Notable that he was healthy, but not on this show, which almost never happens. But I think Kato will assimilate into a role when he needs to, and right now Kato is just not needed a ton. I think Kakuta,
they don't need a monster up top when you have Kakuta.
No, and I was going to say, you know, with Kakuta, it kind of took a second to figure out what he was going to be. And you see, you know, what they've got in the short term with Valletta. You know, you see what they've been able to do with Ben K over the 9 years of his career. And I think Sahara has fit in nicely. And now you've got Kimura. So this is a nice thing to see, where there was a point in time, like with Ben, where they were, I think, purposefully keeping Ben and Shingo away from one another. And the next big guy you had was Yoshida. You know, there wasn't anybody for Ben to bang bodies with other than, you know, a Mochizuki or a Shimizu, but those are different things. And I find this new class of giants that they have, you know, giants being a relative term in Dragon Gate, to be an incredibly interesting thing. And that's probably worth examining. And maybe if I ever find the time, I'll write about that, about this new sort of prototype they have. Again, you know, Kakuta and Ishin and somewhat Valletta, and now Sahara, and now this new kid. It's all very exciting to see.
And that as a judoka, his clutch flash pin that he got here on Ben, that was a fun thing to see. I know that usually whenever you see like, oh, they practice judo and some like martial arts, not necessarily taken with them to the wrestling career, but at least like kind of having something like that for him is a nice like little bit of difference that we don't have on the roster. And I would hope you keep with that a little bit.
It is so funny to me. You know, if I ran a wrestling promotion and, you know, God willing, at some point I'll have control of TBS at 8/7 Central. But, you know, I mean,
as the David Frost of wrestling journalism, I mean, you might be able to get your way up there, Betty.
I'm just
going Powerball and then Angel of Dust and Dragon Gate. That's my plan.
Can your first investment be web design and getting them a new network?
Oh, buddy, under the Spears regime, the cash injection for network, a hotspot, and GoPros or DJIs is just going to blow many people's brains in Kobe.
I just wish more, and maybe this goes to the larger point of the type of people that are getting into wrestling now. I haven't really thought about it from that perspective, but as I talk this out, maybe that's part of what this is. Whether it's in America, Japan, Mexico, or Europe, I just think more wrestlers should be doing judo throws. And I don't understand why it's not something that multiple wrestlers on every roster have in their arsenal. I don't need this to be Jim Cornette's Ring of Honor, where it's, you know, dopey MMA-inspired wrestling. But man, things are better when there's a judo influence. Mm-hmm. And I was really taken by Kimura's judo throw in this match and just how enjoyable it was. And we're also, you know, just ramble on about judo for a second, but we're a year removed from the Olympics where the 5-on-5 judo completely stole my attention and I thought was the greatest addition to the Olympics that I've seen maybe in my lifetime. And it's nice to see that no pro wrestling promoters took note of that and nobody has stolen that concept. It's, you know, essentially just a gauntlet match that Dragon Gate has done before, but nobody has done that in the last year. So that's good to see. I'm glad that we're learning and adapting and not just relying on 1998 Attitude Era stuff to replay over and over again.
Two quick things. First on that, the only other time that I've heard that happen was Kazushi Sakuraba's Quintet Grappling promotion. Like it is where they have like 5-on-5 grapplers and they just keep on going like that. But yeah, no, that's a wrestling type that I wish would pick up. All like the judo talk kind of takes me back to Sasuke Swords and where he like talks about how much easier it is for the former judoka since they already know how to break a fall because you learn how to break a fall in judo and adds that as like a groundwork. Makes me wonder, like, of course there's like the case of many judokas throughout pro wrestling, but why not more pro wrestlers kind of make that connection about the phrase, at least that Sasuke uses, is akimi for bump, which is the judo term for bump. And it makes you wonder why not more people do that as a entryway into pro wrestling versus MMA, karate, or Animal Hamaguchi's gym.
Yes. Yeah, no, it always looks great. I mean, that was 11 years ago. That's what drew me to L. Lindemann, then Yuga Hayashi, was he came in with a judo background. And he was this short little guy, but he had a vicious judo throw. And the first time I saw him do that, I said, I am in on this guy's career. And it was, a nice 10 years of relevancy for him before he started working for a zombie promotion as of 2025.
Yeah, no, missed that guy.
You watch him in the Best of the Super Juniors and you go, well, this is a New Japan caliber junior, you know. Surely we'll see more of him in this promotion, and not so much.
He is booked on Saturday versus Kazuhiko Nakajima and Shinjuku First Ring for Ledet UWF Version 6. It is a UWF World Championship match between those two. When you're semi-main eventing with Kentaro Hachisu, your promotion's having a real hard time.
Yeah, I've said this about Glate before, but I'm trying to envision a scenario in which even a year ago you would have said that Lindemann versus Nakajima is happening. And my response, which is my response now, would be, well, I'm never going to watch that, so I don't really care. That is the damage this promotion has done to me in the last year, because it's Lindemann and Nakajima, I would say, two of my 30 favorite wrestlers of all time. And I just know I'm never going to see that match, so I don't have to worry about it and I don't have to think about it.
But I will rip and try to slide into the Michinoku Pro footage next time as a little treat for you. Exhibition Glate MMA on this card. T-Hawk versus Yu Iizuka. Yu Iizuka is the one that kept on getting injured in UWFI matches and took a sabbatical. He's doing an MMA match against T-Hawk, to my knowledge, has, like, other than Brazilian jiu-jitsu classes, has no training in this whatsoever.
God, that sounds awful. That I
get ready. That's going to be in my Google Drive for you.
I look at these Glade shows, and it's a strange mix of things that I have no interest in. Like a lot of trios matches with five guys that I like and then one outlier that ruins the entire thing for me. Or B, and, you know, not to pat myself on the back, but Mike, I'd like to think I follow Japanese wrestling pretty closely. The second scenario when I look at these Glade cards is I go, who the fuck is that? I don't know the names they're booking anymore. And that is not something I felt about any relevant promotion in over a decade. I at the very least, if I can't identify somebody's face, I know their name. And Glade is booking people that I have just never heard of.
Yeah, like even for me, the one Glade follower, most of the people on this UWF card who are not like who they're matching up against, they're not even getting like Matsukatsu Funaki to show up to these things. Like the big outsider is Hideki Sakane now. That's their big outsider.
Yeah, I don't want to see that. That sounds bad.
I mean, you know who's looking at the other side, and he's the one guy who's happy as New Japan work right now is Harley Jackson going, I don't have to go deal with Black Generation International bullshit. I'm going to go do undercard tags with Zack Sabre Jr. now.
That's really a good point. When we eventually write the Glade obituary, you know, we're going to have to do winners and losers.
And when you say we're going to write it, it is you interviewing me in a padded cell and behind like 2 inches of glass after I finally lose it about this promotion, right? Like we're doing it that way.
You know, the cool, comfortable, relaxed setting that I've been interviewing Tony Khan in, we won't be doing that for the Glade obituary. It will be tense and uncomfortable for everybody involved. And I think we're going to have to do...
It'll be like the Adam Friedland show, basically.
You know, we'll have to take stock of the winners and losers of Glade, and the losers list would, of course, be Shima, El Lindemann, T-Hawk, Shigehiro Irie, Katsuhiko Nakajima, Kaito Ishida.
Yamamura.
So I think there's two winners. I think Hartley Jackson with a bullet is the biggest winner of Glade. And I would
put
Yamamura as the second winner, because Yamamura, knock on wood, has stayed as healthy as he possibly can. It annoys me just how good of a wrestler he is, because I really, you know, while I was still watching Glade, did not want to watch him. But son of a bitch, that guy was still good. So it's Hartley Jackson and it's Yamamura, and then maybe Jun Kasai, because I liked the one time that he showed up, and I think everybody else is a giant loser. Can you imagine Kaito Ishida on the 2025 Dragon Gate roster? How enjoyable that would be.
I think he's doing like some modeling too now.
But he could be a Dragon Gate wrestler, and that would take care of a lot of his issues.
I mean, he could probably have had multiple Dreamgate matches by this point.
Of course. That's where his career was trending. I mean, Skywalker Ishida from 2021, the 4¾-star match. I'm trying to think just off the top of my head about Shun's first reign. It was Ben and then Ishida, Sakamoto, Kakuta, which was the injury match. And then Yamato KZ. So yeah, it's the best Skywalker match that wasn't at Kobe World that year. I mean, it was absolutely incredible. And it was at a point where you and I spent 2020 talking about how Ishida versus Okuda, which now feels like it was 2 billion years ago, you know, they were doing something really unique and innovative. And we used to talk about the idea of the Kaito Ishida comp DVD, just so we could take stock of all the great things that he was doing. And in 2021, he rolled that over into a Dreamgate match and a really fun tag team with Kazuma Sakamoto. And again, you know, that's the story of Glade to me will always be defined by Ishida coming in October of 2022 and that show having real juice to it and real life to it and being an exciting show, even if it wasn't necessarily a great show. And that promotion died the next month when they turned Ishida kind of heel and had him join Black Generation International. It was the same vibe in Korakuen that night as a few months earlier when Minoru interrupted the Kai Shuji Kondo Dreamgate match, and we got that debacle of Coach Minoru in the summer of 2022. You felt the air go out of the building then, and when they did the angle with Ishida in late 2022, when he joined BGI, it was the same feeling. You felt it. Watching that show, you felt the feeling in the room where that crowd went, I'm good. And Glade has never recovered from that one angle. It is that to me was when I stopped taking them seriously as competition for Dragon Gate, because I knew at that point they were dead in the water.
I have some somewhat breaking Glade news for you. Speaking of which, because this might surprise you, I don't like go on their social media ever. I'm going to present a match to you, Case, and tell me how excited at least you would be about one side of this match, not even 5 years ago. The side you're not going to be excited about, Michiko and Kazuma Sakamoto. Maybe you're excited about Kazuma. He's kind of regressed. But on the other side, Shima and making his return, Scorpion Double X.
Wow. Yeah, that's...
5 years ago, you would be on the top of Wrigleyville screaming about about Scorpion Double X returning.
So this is give me the match one more time.
Kazuma Sakamoto and Michiko versus Shima and Scorpion Double X.
So this is what I mean. It's like with all due respect, Michiko, no buys, not interested. I don't care. I don't want to see any of that. I'm good.
But we're getting OWE again.
Yay! Yeah, it worked so well the first time. Bring it back.
Did you have any thoughts on the Love and Peace versus Paradox 8-man that led to the post-match angle that set up the Aoagi brothers in Ryu Inoue versus Yamato DK and Kazuma Kimura?
Yeah, I had a ton of thoughts. Let me rifle through them real quick. I don't understand this Love and Peace thing. I'm going to complain about it until something changes. This unit still, despite getting their ass kicked repeatedly, have real life to them. And I'm failing to see why we're not, as a company, gravitating towards all of these guys. I don't understand it. I don't like it. I hate the way they're being booked. It is the single biggest issue I have with this promotion right now. Thought number two, Yamato and Jackie Kame get into a chop battle as they always do. Yamato pulls down the straps of Kame's overalls so that he's kind of walking around like Masato Yoshino. Jay said it on commentary. I think everybody thought the same thing. Oh, that looks better. Kame should just do that going forward. Later on in the match, Kame put the overalls back up, which I thought was completely deranged and insane behavior.
that's an argument for that Kame is like secretly maybe the darkest force in the company.
I mean, my God, like Jack, I'm doing everything I can for you. If it was up to me, you would be having a Dreamgate challenge later this year, but you can't, you got to take the overalls off. You know, you can't be challenging for the Dreamgate belt like that. And then my third thought is that the angle between the Dragon Gate guys and the All Japan guys, if you're not somebody that normally watches the English commentary or for whatever reason you haven't seen this show yet, to me that angle is just as essential as watching the main event. I was in awe of this entire thing. The promo from Yamato, the response from the All Japan guys, the inclusion of Kimura and Kimura knocking his appearance out of the park there. All of this worked. One of my favorite angles of the year. Everybody knows my thing with All Japan. I respect the hell out of what they're doing at the box office. I like this promotion. I just typically like it a little bit less than everybody else. I am fired up for this. Job well done. And that's not even, I didn't mention the Doi and Ishin stuff that kicked off this entire thing, which was outstanding. It was Doi at his best, Ishin at his best. No notes. A phenomenal angle all the way through.
Yeah, Doi and Ishin, real Spider-Man pointing at each other, just a generation apart there, you know. But so we're getting this Doi self-produced. This is independent of his anniversary show happening in Nara at the end of the month. It's coming in November. I don't have the date for it, but it's a self-produced going on. And is it Shinjuku Face or Shinkiba?
What a great question that is. Let me see. It is Shinjuku Face. And let me see if I have a date for it. Can't find it, but it's Shinjuku Face for sure.
Shinjuku Face, and the entire theme of the show is going to be All Japan versus Dragon Gate. Very fitting because those being his primary homes, at least as of going freelance there, and Ishin immediately kind of hitting the ring, wanting to have inclusion with it. And Doi going like, no, we're not going to have Z-Brats here. You're the worst part of this promotion. I don't want anything to do with you. And basically Doi deciding like, okay, at this point, you're annoying me with nothing good's going to come of this. That's it. You're going against the Sato brothers. It's going to be Ishin leading a Z-Brat side against the Sato brothers on Doi's 25th self-produce in November. And that led into Atsuki Aoyagi and Yume Aoyagi, who are seen in the crowds with their tickets and hitting the ring afterwards, doing a promo saying, hey, we're sorry about Hakuto-gun last month, but we are the Aoyagi brothers, and this is Ryu in a way, and we are looking forward to this match, and we would like to go head-to-head on this. And then Yamato taking exception, especially exception of Ryu in a way, who was being just what you would want for like that kind of role. And then just to hammer this point home, Kazuma Kimura gets called into the ring and he looks like he wants to eat Ryu Inoue's lunch and he's ready to go immediately. If there's ever going to be a Paradox assistant or young boy, it has to be Kimura after this. And that match is made for Dangerous Gate. Yuma and Atsuki Aoyagi and Ryu Inoue versus Yamato, Dragon Kid, and Kazuma Kimura.
Love it. Super into it. I really thought this was a home run of an angle. I did not expect the Kimura stuff. I did not expect the All Japan guys to be as lively as they were. I really, really liked all of this.
Yeah, and at least like when we see Dragon Gate with All Japan, we haven't kind of gotten this element in the past. Of course, Susumu being a former world junior champion before, I think that was like 2020, 2021, he had that for a while there, but it instantly already really into what prospects could be on this self-produce show coming November.
I agree.
And going through the remainder of the card, we've kind of touched on the major things, Case. We already talked about Kazuma Kimura's debut, the six-man Natural Vibes versus Ultimo Bendito and Punch Tominaga. We touched on the opener, BB Hulk and Kakatora versus Masaki Mochizuki and Daiki Yanagiuchi. I think Kakatora's head maybe has landed from orbit after the final exchange in that opener.
Yeah, fun stuff there. Really enjoyed that.
But that was the Gate of Adventure in Tokyo on the network. It was Tuesday, if you're looking for that afterwards. Case, before we are out of here, we have one show coming up this weekend on the Dragon Gate Network. It's the Dragon Gate Summer Festival in Kobe, celebrating Mountain Day in Japan, Yaman no Hi. And as we talked about last week, this is kind of like the big festival show. They open the doors early. They do festival games. And I'm going to run down the card that we have announced for it. It's a pretty interesting one. We started off with a singles match. Kimura gets Yoshiki Kato near immediately, so we get Battle of the Bulls there. We get to have kind of a Kung Fu Masters versus the Shenlongs and Sachihoko machine, as it's Hoholon, Holy, and Reach Tominaga versus Super Shenlong 2, Super Shenlong 3, and Sachihoko machine. Ultimo Dragon Takashi versus Don Fuji and Izushi Kanda, Masaki Mochizuki and Ryu Fuda versus Daiki Yanagiuchi and Akihiro Sahara. Case, your best friend, Seiji Miyane, has designated the Gate of Miyane deciding Royal Sambo. Don't know what that means, but he picked all of members in this. Of course, Gate of Miyane is coming up in September. Yamato, Dragon Kid, BB Hulk, Susumu, Kakatora, Naruki Doi, Strong Machine J, KZ, UT, Hyo, Mochizuki Jr., Kota Minora, Jason Lee, Kai, and Ishin. A second singles match, Hamare versus Madoka Kakuta, and the Summer Festival 2025 SP three-way six-man tag team match from Love and Peace, Benkei, Jackie, Kamei, and Rita, D-Courage, Yuki Yoshioka, Dragon Dai, and Ryoya Tanaka, and Team Mexico, Flamita, Luis Monte, and Bendito.
I love the main event. I am quite into the last two matches on that show. I think those are going to be a lot of fun.
And I think it's interesting with the beef that Miyane has with Shun Skywalker. He is not on this card. I fully expect to see him after match six or after match five if Miyane is there.
Yes, absolutely.
But we'll be back next week to talk about that and give our full preview for the Gate of Destiny. But Case,
Dangerous Gate, even.
oh yeah, we're not having Gate of Destiny. We're having Dangerous Gate this year. There is no Gate of Destiny in 2025. We'll be talking about Dangerous Gate from Oda City General Gymnasium case. It's our first appearance back there since 2023. And it's brought to us by our new friends, Mizukan Kansansu Vinegar, is bringing us Dangerous Gate on the 17th.
I can't wait.
I'm going to have a full report on this company for next episode, but that's going to do it here, unless you have anything else, bud.
I do not.
So you could follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate. Case on Twitter is _ in your case. I'm on Twitter at Fujihei. If you'd like to join the conversation, there's the Voice of Wrestling Discord. That's where we have our Open the Voice Gate channel, where we will have all of our show updates when there's those days. That's where we post the match listings and all of that. But also there's a great Dragon Gate channel where we have people who watch the show live and doing live chat and matches of the week, all kinds of fun stuff. That's at the Voices of Wrestling Discord. But that's going to do it this week for Open the Voice Gate. We'll be back with you next week talking about the Summer Festival in Kobe, as well as Dangerous Gate 2025. Take care, everyone.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich. And if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Every other Monday, we're coming at you with news, show reviews, and previews of upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're just getting into the scene or you've seen it all, this is the show for you.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network and wherever you get your audio.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.